Well, I'd like to welcome to the Caregiver Smile Summit 2, Tracy Lawrence. We're going to be talking about to move or not to move. Tracy's an educator, innovator, disruptor, and entrepreneur. She's the founder of Grand Family Planning, where she shows clients the power of being proactive in the light of uncertainty that illness and death will be part of every person's life. Her team-based approach simplifies a daunting and complex task. She has a great book. It's called Dementia Sucks. I love that title. It was published by Post Hill Press in May of 2018, available at fine bookstores and Amazon. Welcome, Tracy, to the Caregiver Smile Summit.
Thanks so much, Anthony. It's a pleasure to be here.
All righty. So let's just jump right in. What changes typically necessitate a change in residence?
Great question. Well, in my experience, as we age, things happen, right? So a lot of times as we get older, our mobility becomes impaired. We can't move around as well as we once did. And this doesn't necessarily just happen to people who get old. You know, sometimes stuff happens to us in life. Not too long ago, last year, in fact, my husband got sick, and he was only 58 years old, and he'd been hospitalized a couple of times. Our home is on two levels, and for the first time in our lives, you know, living here since 2002, I was starting to rethink, you know, am I really going to be able to live here for the long haul, because coming up those stairs is a problem. So mobility, whether it's temporary or permanent, is a big consideration when you are looking at where you're living. The next thing is cognitive issues. I had a front row seat to this with my mom. I brought her to live with me because her cognitive abilities were not hanging in there. So it's very important when, as someone's cognitive abilities are changing, to keep analyzing, you know, where they're at and what needs to be done in order to ensure their safety and their well-being and the safety of others. So, so that's a very important consideration. And you also want to look at, you know, what your support system is. Because even though you may still be sharp and you may still be fairly mobile, environments change, people change, you have a social network, and you know, people die, people move away. Your kids may need you. You may find that your grandkids are spending more time with you. Today, we have a situation where multi-generational families are being put in positions they had never envisioned. So people come together, they move apart. And so depending on what the needs of the family are at any given time, the place where they're currently residing may no longer serve them.
Right. Okay. So cognitive issues, mobility, and kind of a social support network. Great. Yeah. Yes. All right. So what are the factors to be considered when determining the appropriateness of a home for a person's well-being?
Well, a lot of things that you don't think of when you're healthy, okay? How many levels do you have? Excuse me. stairs can be a real problem. When you get to a certain stage of life. Sometimes it's not just your physical mobility, it can be visual impairment, not being able to see the stairs. Then, you know, when you're younger, you don't need things to steady you. Your home may benefit from some modifications. Sorry for the ums. You really need to be cognizant of the kinds of environmental changes that can help as we get older. And are they sensible? Are they doable? And to really know like what some of those technologies might be. So I have a client, for instance. They live on a lake, and the mom has not been able to go up and down the stairs for many years. Her husband is. So the family made a decision. Mom does not want to leave. She isn't leaving until somebody carries her out. So they were able to have one of their children, their adult children, agree to move close by so that he can help out mom and dad as their needs change. So while my first impression was this home is not appropriate for this couple, they are making it work because they are very determined. They have a family that is on board with helping them to maintain their lifestyle. And they went to the length of actually buying another home across the street so this son could have his independence and be there as needed to help out. So it really is very dependent on the family and what their goals are.
Yeah, and I think we'll see that people become even more creative in living arrangements and cohabitations and things like that, especially with the solo agers and when we have services like Silvernest and others that are trying to bring people together. And they're going to get even more creative because, yeah, I think my wife and I are of the same thing unless we get carried out of our house. And we have two stories and we don't have a first story bedroom. Mm-hmm. So we just renovated our bathroom. And, you know, we put a few things that you would think about, you know, the appropriate height things and grab bars. But, you know, stairs or elevators or anything like that, stairless, we haven't even, you know, crossed that bridge. And hopefully won't have to. But that kind of brings us to the next question. When does it make sense to renovate versus weighing the cost of let's say we're still not ready for assisted living but there's so many, I'm in the Charlotte area and there's so many 50 and over communities that are developing. It's just crazy. When do you do the cost benefit analysis of renovate versus, you know, move?
I think that's an ongoing process, Anthony. And I think for a lot of people, those questions are going to ease into the conversation. And, you know, there will always be this idea that with enough will and enough money, you can make whatever environment you're in work, right? But then you got to kind of look at the community around you. Now, if you're in an over 55 community and the expectation is that you're going to sell to people who are over 55 and are going to want the kinds of renovations that you're going to make, well, then your house maintains its value. But if you're going to customize your place to your condition and keep, bust down walls and bring in hospital beds and like really turn your house into a mini nursing home, you know, then you got to think about what's the resale value going to be on that house.
Sure.
So, you know, it's a lot of people don't really think, they don't go to that length. And if you've got heirs, people who you're going to leave your stuff to, then, you know, they're going to be in a position of probably taking less money for the house when they sell it because, you know, somebody is going to want to completely rearrange the home. So it's really, it's looking at the area that you're in and what changes you're going to make. Does it make financial sense? If you have the resources, you can do whatever you want. But, sometimes, you know, there people do things that just in the scheme of things don't make sense.
Right. And sometimes people make decisions out of emotion when they really kind of need to kind of look logically and rationally at what's going on. So
absolutely,
certainly is part of it. So, you know, another way to stay in your home is to bring in the technologies. And, you know, quite frankly, even though we work in the industry, I'm overwhelmed by what I see every day in terms of the technologies coming down the pike and the level of adoption of these technologies. You know, on a very basic level, you know, what kind of services and technologies make sense without overwhelming people? I know we have all of these home monitoring systems that are emerging. And if mom doesn't pop the pill box at a certain time or whatever, I mean, it can get really confusing. Are there some baselines that say, yeah, if you're going to consider something, like, let's start with this and that, and then we can kind of move on from there?
Sure. I would say, like, for mobile people, I would look at having some kind of call button that's cellular enabled, because, you know, you could fall anywhere, right? And if you're still driving and you're still, you know, going places, you know, you might want to have some kind of call button that's cellular, not just connected to the house. If you're more homebound, you know, then it makes sense to have, you know, a home system. It's also good to have the best technology is having people, having people around you who know you and care about you and can check in on you and can help you out. That is, like, there's no substitute for having human beings in your life who really care. Because while all of these technologies are great, you know, there needs to be somebody on the other end who's paying attention to the data that's being captured by these devices. Some people really love the idea of having, like, you know, an Alexa or a Google, you know, home kind of device. And, you know, that can be very helpful, you know, but again, it's knowing how to use it, knowing where that information is going and having some interaction with it, having some idea of how to really use it for your best interest, so that you're not just giving up all of your privacy and your information as well.
Right. And there's so many competing services out there, and you're absolutely right. People are the best resources, and all this data you're collecting, if you don't act on it, it is kind of useless. I think technology also isolates us sometimes, when it can be a great enabler as well. I mean, you know, I joke, my mom was on Facebook at 94 when she passed. So, you know, and my mother-in-law as well at 87. So obviously when you're looking at this whole move, not move, renovate, whatever, there's always a financial component out there. Do you have any recommendations on what people can do to kind of take stock of that as they're looking to make a decision on what they're going to do?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that I can't stress highly enough is have a conversation with an elder law attorney, especially if you have heirs. You want to make sure that you're doing smart things with what you have while you have it. You want to make sure that, you know, your heirs, your kids are on the same page with you, so that they understand that it's better to spend your hard-earned assets on your care than to be concerned about how much you're going to leave behind. And a lot of people make that mistake. They're like, I want to maximize what, you know, my kids should have. Listen, you should have, you know, everyone has the right to be comfortable and safe in wherever they choose to live. So, you know, so put yourself first. That's number one. Let your kids know what your goals are. That's number two. That's extremely important. And if you're reluctant to let your kids in on it and you're thinking, I don't want to be a burden on them, trust me when I say that you're much less of a burden on them when you're talking about this stuff when you're healthy and able than by putting it off until there's a crisis. You don't want to do that. Now, you know, you can, of course, if you've got retirement money set aside, you want to look at how much you have and what you want to have happen with that money. And a lot of people don't realize that there's a wonderful way of being able to leverage their home. A lot of people they spend all their money on their house. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we live in our homes. It's, you know, it's a great investment. But when you get to be over 62, there's a program called reverse mortgage. And this is a very misunderstood tool. And for a lot of people who haven't been able to put the right amount of, you know, the right resources aside, and they want to stay in their house, reverse mortgage can be an excellent tool for being able to stay in your home and getting the resources that you need to update your house, to make the renovations necessary, and to make your environment as conducive to a comfortable and happy life for as long as you're there as possible. So it's a really good direction to look in. The laws have been calibrated so that people who elect to look in that direction are protected. It's not like the old days where, you know, it was a very scary thing where, you know, people had to worry about, you know, am I going to lose my house? Am I going to, you know, it's virtually impossible for those kinds of things to happen now. So it's a really good place to look. And if you're young enough and you're well enough, look into some kind of long-term care insurance. People need to understand that Medicare does not pay for custodial care and long-term care. So you can't count on that as being your fallback. You have to have some kind of financial support so that when you need help getting around with your activities of daily living, you have the resources in place to be able to do that.
Right. It's always good to remind people about those myths, even though we say it over and over again and we know it. A lot of people still think somehow Medicare or Social Security is going to come to their rescue, and it's simply not the case. Medicare in only a small amount of time and only after a hospitalization. So the second thing I would definitely say is, you know, as a professional who was caregiving for my mother, we did engage a elder care attorney who was instrumental, just a great, you know, asset to us. And so even when you look at people like yourself and I, we don't have all the answers. We might be able to connect the dots, but there are people who know the fine minutia of how to protect yourself. The other thing I would say too is that on our first caregiver summit, we did have an expert, a trusted advisor of mine, who talked about reverse mortgages. And I would say, we're not making any endorsements here, but I would say they have changed for sure, because they did have a bad rap, and now they're becoming more of a tool that makes sense to use when it's appropriate. So I just kind of want to, you know, put some of that in context. What are there any new living arrangements out there that we haven't heard of? I mean, we know home health, skilled nursing, assisted living. You know, we're starting to see some intergenerational types of movement, and, you know, students moving into assisted living and all kind of stuff. Have you seen anything else that's innovative and new coming down the pike?
Sure. One of the things that I love the idea, now they're doing this in Europe now, and I think that this is going to happen here. The students moving in with older folks, and another paradigm that I have a friend who has a special needs daughter, who is she's 28. She has CP. She's blind, and she's medically fragile. And, you know, she's no longer in the school system. Her, you know, her parents are responsible for her care. And they are looking at creating communities where these special needs kids are having their needs met in environments where elderly are also being cared for. And what's beautiful about those kinds of communities is that they're centered around medical care for everyone, because they all need a higher level of care than able people and younger people. But also the older people have an opportunity to help out with the special needs kids. And the special needs kids really enjoy the company of the older folks. So developing these kinds of communities where they can play off of each other, where they can contribute to each other's health and well-being. It's been found that when aging people are in a situation where they have purpose, where they feel needed, they thrive. Their quality of life escalates at an amazing pace. So those kinds of communities, I think, are really exciting direction that,
right,
that we should be looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. I know here locally where I live in Charlotte, there's the Charlotte Villages Network. And, you know, it's about a group of volunteers springing into action for elders who live in the community, but this is taking it to another level with where you're actually looking at the whole intergenerational piece of it. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing we haven't talked about is that amongst all of this to move or not to move is the talk, you know, with the parent around that. Because, you know, ultimately with my mom, she had no cognitive issues at all. So when she decided to move out of Philly, it was totally her decision to move with my sister in Florida. Of course, we had to separate the combatants for a while because they're getting ready to kill each other. But, you know, some people, you know, it's harder to have the talk. So what do you recommend there in terms of approaching the subject at all?
That's a great, great question. And it comes up a lot. One of the things that I suggest people do is, first of all, if it's the adult children who feel strongly that it's time to start talking about it, you're going to get pushback. That's just the way it is because, you know, or aging folks regard their children as their babies, no matter how old or accomplished they become. Right. And it's like, who the hell are you to tell me how to live my life? Right. So, I say back off, absolutely back off, but don't give up. And I also advise people to seek out respected people in your parents' lives. So if there's a religious leader or somebody in the community they really respect, it could be a golfing buddy. You know, it could be anyone that your parents have a relationship with. They respect that person. The adult children should go have a conversation with that person outside of their parents' attention, right? And express their concerns. And then get that person involved. And if you bring that person into the conversation, the whole dynamic can change. Because now you've got this person who's not their child, who understands what the goal is, and who agrees, and who's saying, you know what? Your kids love you. They're not trying to take something away from you. They're trying to give you something. So if you're trying to offer them assistive technologies, right, or bring a stranger into the house, right, because, you know, parents right. always love having strangers in the house, right, to change that conversation from, no, you don't need a babysitter, but we think it's time that you had a personal assistant, right? Maybe it's time you stop driving. You did have that fender bender last week, and thank God you didn't hurt anybody. But, you know, so now we can look at hiring an assistant for you who drives, or somebody who can go with you to the store so, you know, you don't have to carry all that heavy stuff by yourself. You know, so there are a lot of different ways and a lot of different things that they can take advantage of. And by changing the way it's presented to make it a benefit rather than a threat, to make it an advantage rather than something that's going to diminish them. You want to make them feel empowered because a lot of the arguments that come up are around control, right? You're trying to take control of my life. No, I'm not. I want control of my life. And I also want to have the peace of mind of knowing that you have what you need to conduct your life as well as possible in this stage of your life.
Right. And going with that is, you know, mom or dad, you'll make my life better as well as your life if we can do this cooperatively.
Right. Do it for me. I worry about you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Tracy, I want to thank you for being part of the Caregiver Smile Summit. Hopefully we'll take Dementia Sucks and make it suck less, hopefully, through the information you've given us, which I truly appreciate. So thank you.
My pleasure, Anthony. Thanks so much for having me. And I hope everyone enjoys the summit. I know it's going to be a great resource that people will get so much out of. So thank you for allowing me to be part of it.